The next 20 minutes we're going to be talking, I'm going to be talking actually, on helping couples deal with intimacy and sexuality. Again, 20 minutes, this is just going to be not even an intro to an amazing topic. It's probably going to raise more questions than give it answers. But anyways, let's start. Just a few months ago, I was flying from LA to Belgrade. Browsing through a plethora of movies, I picked one to watch. Soon in the movie, there was an inappropriate nude scene. I was not just surprised, I was shocked. When did that happen? I remember flying and never being concerned if the F word or inappropriate scene will jump out. But right now, we live in an era that is like post-sexual revolution, where in a blink of an eye, everything changes. When you can watch inappropriate movies with hundreds of people around you, when sex is freely displayed in billboards, where school teachers write erotic books, where with one click on your phone, you just travel to the world of pornography. Even though sex is not a taboo, and it is available even through common friendship, sharing nothing more than benefits, people will say. People are more and more lonely and disconnected. Just how important is satisfying sex in sustaining love relationship? Good sex, it turns out, is integral, though not paramount to happy relationships. Sex educators Barry and Emily McCarthy of American University, Washington, D.C., have concluded that after researching in this area, content spouses attribute only 15 to 20% of their happiness to pleasing sex life. But unhappy mates ascribe 50 to 70% of the stress to sexual problems. Satisfied partners see sex as just one of many sources of pleasure and intimacy, while dissipated partners view sex as the chief source of trouble. Why is sex such a huge issue for dissatisfied partners? Because it is typically the first thing affected when the relationship falters. I love, again, I'm going to mention Dr. Sue Johnson. She calls the sexual distress in a relationship the version of a canary in the mine. And I just love that picture. A long time ago, when the mine workers would go down in a mine, they would carry the bird with them so that when there is not oxygen, the bird will die, will stop singing and will die, so they will know that it's not safe for them. And I just love that picture, that when you find yourself looking at the spouse and not being attracted or not wanting to be, to have sex and be intimate with somebody next to you, that you share family, you share kids, you share everything, life, maybe the canary stopped singing. What's really happening is that a couple is losing connection. The partners don't feel emotionally safe with each other. That, in turn, leads to slackening desire and less satisfying sex, which leads to less sex and more hurt feelings, which leads to still looser emotional connection, and around it goes. In shorthand, no safe bond and connection, no sex. No sex, no connection and bond. Very often, sex is presented as end itself. Sex is all about immediate physical satisfaction, somebody will say. Sex is an act. And it's actually easier to define and to give a definition of sex. It's not that easy to define intimacy. I love this definition of intimacy. I was reading somewhere, so I'm sorry, I'm not going to say who is the author. But it says, intimacy holds a relational stance. It is the sense of closeness, a feeling of being connected or bonded, a sense of welfare for the other, having high regard for the other, perceiving the other as trustworthy and giving emotional support freely to the other, among other meanings. God designed us as sexual beings. The sexual response is controlled by one's involuntary nervous system. It begins at birth and continues throughout life. Although sexual response is automatic, functioning throughout life, our sexuality is not only an automatic physical response. Sexual feelings, responses, and behaviors are subject to social, cultural, conditional that begins at birth and continues throughout life. My background is in psychology, and I love working with kids. Sometimes I do work with couples, but I said I find it overwhelming, but I do. And I find my own marriage sometimes overwhelming. But I decided, actually, I'm going to give again another little lesson. So there is in your chart, there's a chart in your outline. So I'm going to actually tell you, walk with you through some stages of, through the stages of sexual development. So during infancy, from birth to age one, children learn about themselves as sexual persons from their primary caretakers, usually their parents. When a close, warm, and trusting bond is formed, children master the ability to form close relationship, including the physical relationship. Toddlerhood, the second stage is a genital center stage of development. From 1 to 3 years of age, it is natural for children to touch their genitals and learn that this feels good. This is the time when children learn to control, talk about, and name the body parts. The cultural and social conditioning that takes place during this stage will determine whether a child accepts the genitals as natural, beautiful part of God's creation, or whether he or she views the genitals and his sexuality as untouchable, unmentionable, or dirty. This was toddlerhood. Preschoolers. Preschoolers' sexual curiosity is manifested in question asking. How the sexual questions are handled at this age will set the tone for adulthood, comfort regarding discussions of sexuality. Curiosity continues into school age with the development of a sense of modesty, the indication of sexual awareness. During this time, nudity becomes an issue. Children begin to be shy about their bodies, to be aware of sexual differences, and may be stimulated by seeing a nude body. Both extremes, either overexposure or extreme of modesty, inhibit the development of a healthy sexual awareness. Exploratory play is almost inevitable for a school-age child. Boundaries are necessary. Pre-adolescence. Before I come to pre-adolescence, I don't know, let me just say just one or two things. If you have these kids, they're school age, when I talk about boundaries, I mean, even the boundaries, everything the internet offers, everything that's happening in there that they can be bombarded with, you should be on the top of that. You should know where they are. You should know what they're watching. You should know where they're gathering their information. Pre-adolescence brings awkwardness, burst of energy, and emotional volatility, unstableness, I think that will be probably another word. Erotic feelings begin to tingle as the hormones spurt. This is the kiss and run stage. Self-acceptance and competence in relating to the opposite sex should be mastered in this age. Adolescence is a time to assume responsibility for sexual behaviors and develop patterns of responsibility and sexual wholesomeness. These decisions need to be consistent with Christian beliefs, family values, and commitment to the relationship. Sexual feelings should be separated from sexual behaviors. God designed sexual feelings. Sexual desire is good. Nevertheless, decisions must be made regarding the behaviors that occur in response to the desire. In order to pass, this is just the hardest time. And this is the hardest, developmentally the hardest time. I mean, just think, when I was young, for me to be introduced to pornography material, you know, it was somebody needed to have a picture from the magazine to find it at his, I don't know, parents' drawer, or to be embarrassed and ask and buy something. Now, a click. Now, it's opening your eyes and walking on the streets of Europe. It's not easy. It's not easy being a young adult. It's not easy for our teenage kids. In order to pass through adolescence and move into healthy single adulthood, adolescents must allow themselves to experience vital sexual feelings while making clear decisions which limit their choices of sexual actions. When the developmental task of each stage has been mastered, one should have an integrated sense of his or her sexuality and spirituality that will act as a guide for the task of adult relationship. It is put upon us as believers, as teachers, as parents, to raise these questions, to give the answers. The Bible very openly talks in really keeping the purity in this area. It is honoring Him. This body is the temple of the Holy Spirit. Our children's bodies are the temple of the Holy Spirit. And with all the things that are happening around the world, the things that are happening inside of their bodies, how do we know God and honor God and serve God? And at the same time, we develop, we experience, we know, we enjoy. I mean, we as Christians should have the best sex life. We as Christians should be the first and the most, the loudest teachers about sexuality. Our kids need to hear what we have to say. Our kids given to us in faith, the ones that we influence and work with, should be changed because of what we talk and how we influence them. We are very often, the people will say, and I'm going to go kind of briefly and quickly because I want to talk more about this. So I'm going to go through the and go kind of quicker through the gender differences. And the people will say, the man and woman are different. And the people will often say, and you'll see even the pictures, how the male brain works and how the female. And Richard Winter has great topics and great pictures and just the story and how that works and everything. So I'm not going to go into all the details. But one thing that I found it interesting, even though we all heard we are different, you know, it's okay, you know, men are like microwaves. The women are like slow cookers. That's what the people say. The sexual response is different. The DSM defines the sexual dysfunction that a male are going to experience different than the female. So there are differences. But actually, just recently, Peterson and Hyde in 2010, they said that there are moderate to no gender differences. Shocking. Only moderate gender differences were found in terms of masturbation, use of pornography, and the number of the sexual partners. Gender similarities were found in terms of oral sex, perception, attitudes about masturbation, extramarital sex, and use of condom. But again, very often in our office, the therapist office, we'll hear that a man are all about sex, and women are just like, come on, that's all he talks about, you know. The female clients will complain. They're obsessed with sex, they will say. There is an interesting study, and I'm going to mention Dr. Johnson. She talks about touching and skin-to-skin contact as the language of sex and the language of attachment. And she says, just think, and actually, males may be particularly vulnerable to touch hunger. We all have desire to be touched. The right from birth, boys are held for shorter periods and cares less often than are girls. So whenever female clients complain that a man are obsessed with sex, Dr. Johnson says, I will be too if his sex were the only place apart from the football field where I ever got touched and held. So I don't know, are we that different or not? But talking about that polka dance and a really smooth dance that God offers to us, and I really think that the dance moves, He is the one that knows and wants to teach us all so that we can dance here. So what are some of the moves that we can learn so that we can actually experience and have the best sex in the world? I mean, we should be the happiest people in the world, and we for sure should have the best sex in the world, because the master and the lover, the one, the creator, is our Father, and He wants to teach us the moves. He doesn't have a problem talking about that. But some of the steps that I'm going to go through is emotional openness. Vulnerability and self-disclosure are absolutely essential for sexual functioning. Emotional nakedness is a prerequisite for physical nakedness, a fact that is distorted in the current culture. True sexuality blossoms only when it preceded by the communication, openness, and trust that grows out of genuinely intimate relationship. The second thing, so the emotional openness. If I can't tell you how was my day and why am I hurt, then don't ask me to have sex right away. That's kind of like a female way of thinking. You're like, let's just not go there. But when somebody comes, I was just recently having a man that came to my office. They've been married for 15 years and they have not had sex for 6. And it's kind of like, okay, in Serbia, man that comes and he's the one that sees that that's not right. She was not there. She didn't want to be in the picture. She is unhappy. And she did come and we live like roommates. So when he came, one of the things that we were kind of like, that I was helping him is, come next time and tell me. Tell me what you've seen in your wife. Just tell me about her. Just describe her. Can you start watching her? Look at her. It's kind of like, do you guys remember the God that sees? And then the first, see her. And then listen to her. And it's kind of like you're being attuned to this dance. The second thing is trust. Trust between the husband and wife is a natural prerequisite to sexual intimacy. And it's a consequence of effective communication and emotional openness. Respect. Respect is that sense of looking up to or holding the other person in high esteem and considering that person worthy. Open enjoyment of each other is an essential ingredient to a fulfilling sexual life. Just as the child who feels like a source of delight to the parent will blossom, so the sexual relationship in marriage can come to fulfillment when the enjoyment of each other is present. So the church should be a classroom for sexual education. Since God Himself is love, and we have fellowship and communion with Him, love is the test of our discipleship. If we love others, we belong to Jesus Christ. If we lack love, we are not His at all. God is triune communion of persons. Love is intrinsic to who He is. Love, however, belongs to who He is in Himself, in the undivided communion of three persons. The Father loves the Son. The Son loves the Father. The Son loves the Holy Spirit. The Holy Spirit loves the Son. The Father loves the Holy Spirit. The Holy Spirit loves the Father. The reciprocal love of the three persons exists in the unbreakable unity of the undivided Trinity. As I mentioned at the end of the last topic, that together, married and single, we are the recipients of the high calling to function as image of the loving, united, Trinitarian God. I grew up in a non-Christian family. We never talked about sex. My husband grew up in a Christian family, and this is where the Christians choose to be. Well, hopefully my mother-in-law is not going to watch this because I'm going to mention her. Her part about sex, this is what she had to say. Sorry for all the moving. She said, I just think the whole thing is weird. But then my father-in-law talked to every one of his son about everything. What sex is, how does it work, what the name of the parts are, all the questions, all the things that they're gonna struggle, how they can enjoy. I love that man. So when he came to teaching our kids and talk to them, it is uncomfortable. How I learned about sex, thanks to peers. Oh my gosh, what did they know, right? And books. Well, that's how you made the kids at least read at that time. But there were no internet. The most important goal in sex education is to equip and empower our children to enter adulthood capable of living godly, wholesome, and fulfilled lives as Christians, men and women, Christian wives and husbands. Professor Jones, and I'm just going to mention him, from Wheaton College, together with his wife, they put different books, and I have, you can see it in suggested readings, but they put all these principles, how you can teach your children. They have all the books, and it's like in different time, what you can tell them. And actually keeping our body holy, this temple, giving God honor through our bodies, it really is the most powerful way to witness, to be a standing witness to who God is in a world that we live today. So I'm pretty sure that my time is up. But I'm going to very quickly just read the principles that he talks about. And please, you have it in your outlines, Professor Jones. This is what he said. These are the principles. Sex education is the shaping of the character. Parents are the principal sex educators. First message are the most potent messages. Seize those teachable moments and be askable parent. Accurate and explicit message are best. Positive messages are powerful. Stories are powerful teaching tools. Inoculate your children against destructive beliefs. Repetition is critical. Repetition is really, really important. Close, positive, and balanced parent-child relationships are crucial. Sexuality is not everything. Keep your perspective. Our God can forgive, heal, and redeem anything. Please do not ignore your children. The one that God has given you and the ones that are around you that he has given you in faith. Thank you.
Copyright Forum of Christian Leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.